You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So hype right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. I want to thank everybody for making us part of your daily routine, Monday through Friday, daily, free. We're here for you. I am John Corrales. I cover the team for MassLive.com. I'm your host of this show. Today, special guest from Celtics Blog. Welcome aboard, Andrew Doxy. What's going on, my man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I didn't know this was going to happen. And really, there's like two other people who would have been more appropriate for this show. Maybe Jack Michael would have been a little bit more appropriate for the show. But this is like a momentous occasion because it's Ben Simmons hit a 3-day. And I feel like as a purveyor of Weird Celtics Twitter, the home of shoot a three, you coward. You're like the representative here, by the way. Like you're here. You're like, I'm ticking off the boxes, man. I'm trying to appeal to a younger generation. Maybe learn a little bit about anime. I don't know.
We could do that.
Yeah, we could. I was thinking about making fun of Sam Sheehan a little bit. Are you a fan of his Japanese murder bear game?
Look, he's tried many times to convert me into buying it and playing it. I've held strong so far.
Really?
Really? So far. We'll see.
I threatened to play it Danganronpa, right?
Yeah.
I threatened to play it once when I was living in New York. I was thinking, like, I'm going to go over there. I'm going to play this stupid game. We're going to put it on Twitch. It never happened. And I feel like I didn't miss out on anything.
Yeah, honestly, it might be better for that not happening. But, you know, we'll...
Also, there's a tiny bit of fear that I, you know, going into an enclosed space with Sam Sheehan, not sure exactly what would have happened in that scenario, but...
Yeah, like I said, you're better off for it, and you're still with us. Thank you.
Still here. So Ben Simmons hit a three. Your reaction?
I was away when it happened, so I came back to my phone and I saw the alerts and I was very confused. but when I saw this might be, you know, carryover from the fact that Al Horford left us for them, but you know, seeing the clip and you know, seeing the celebration in the arena like it was a game winner and seeing Al Horford, like it was like watching one of your kids' classmates do like accomplish something, and it's like, you know, it feels odd, but I felt emotional a little bit. I don't know if that's okay to say, but you know, I'll probably get torched for this a little bit, but you know, for a moment I was taken over by the emotions, and then I went back to cracking jokes. But you know, I had a quick moment where I was like, wow, this is kind of wholesome.
You can't see it was almost like when like the Philadelphia Eagles beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Like, I'm born and raised around here. Like, you're raised to be like anti-Philly, but at the same time, you know, the first time doing it, I was like, you know, it's cool. Like, it's fine. And like in that moment, you're like, yeah, that's kind of fun. But right. At the same time, it did bring up some painful things. Like watching Al Horford sitting there celebrate that was a little painful from a Celtics perspective, for sure. I feel like you tell me if this is right. Should I be upset that the shoot a three, you coward thing is done? Or should I be happy that weird Celtics Twitter cyber-bullied Ben Simmons into taking a three?
There are a couple of different angles you could take with this. I mean, first and foremost, are we even sure that because it did happen in an NBA game, but it was an NBA preseason game, and it was against a team that is not in the NBA. So therefore, did he really make a three an NBA game? I don't know.
That's very true, because while this video exists, when you go through, if he doesn't hit an NBA three this season, you'll still go through his basketball reference page and there will be a zero there. And there's still a zero there. So it's fun, but it's, I get it. I like this position. I like taking this position from a Celtics perspective. Like, we can dig in and be like, it didn't happen. It'd be like fake news. It'd be like a total, like, fake news. Didn't happen. Pull up the stats.
Show me your basketball reference page. Show me the stats.
Is there a one there? No, it's a zero. Still a zero.
Change my mind.
I don't know. Tell me. Prove it. So. Yeah.
But on the other hand, you make a good counterpoint. You played devil's advocate for yourself there with the fact that we cyberbullied him into taking it. So it's, I feel a little bit of pride there, even though I had nothing to do with it, but by proxy. Sure. Being an associate of Jack _Microsoft team, I feel like I contributed to this. I made some memes, so
that's true.
I do feel a sense of pride.
I feel like my appropriate reaction here should just be, oh.
I mean, personally, I was more like, oh, wow. But, everybody has their own thing.
Sure. I think where I'm going to settle on this, it's preseason for Celtics Twitter. Preseason for everybody. So none of this counts. We all got some good practice. It's a good precursor. We now have our reaction kind of practice. So we're practicing our timing on the Ben Simmons. If he actually does hit a real three reaction, like, we can start to hone our, like, all retreat to our DMs and, text change or whatever you kids use to communicate with one another. Figure out what worked, what didn't, and then should this situation come up again, a little bit more of a coordinated effort on how to get the real Ben Simmons hit a three thing. Because
exactly, yeah.
I think that's where we're going to land on this. My real reaction is that it's nice that he did it. He also did it at the end of a half, time winding down.
With the whole team yelling at him to do it.
Yeah, everybody like begging him to shoot, a defender 10 feet off of him, and like, fine, screw it, I'll throw it up there. And he did. Like, okay, it went in, that's nice. Like, you can't take that away, that video exists. But at the same time, how about, like, in a crucial situation where Philly is up 7 after giving up a 5-0 run, and he's standing there above the break, and the defender is sagging off him, and they need a shot to end the run and win a clutch game. Now, that's where you take a three, Coward, and right. That's what I want to see.
That's what takes real courage here,
Well, this has been a very nice beginning to the podcast. We're actually going to talk Celtics. We had a couple of things to talk about when it comes to the Celtics. Brad Stevens.
Wait. We are?
Yeah. Oh, were you not? Okay. I mean, Yeah. I mean, I think I suckered you in with the Ben Simmons talk, but now it's obligated now through, there's a legal DM thing when you said yes, that it kind of obligated you for the next two segments. So I'll tell you what, we'll take a break. We'll let you catch your breath and see if you really want to continue doing the podcast. When we come back, I will be talking about the Celtics starting center lineup and Brad Stevens talking about Cantor kind of maybe coming off the bench. And then later on, I will be talking about Jason Tatum and what was said about his maturity. We'll see if Andrew Doxy decides he wants to come back and talk actual Celtics when we come back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Andrew, still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You ready to go? We're doing this?
Yeah, I'm good to go.
We're good. We're doing it. Okay.
Is my audio sound clear?
Your audio sounds clear. Is your mind clear?
It's
you need to clear your voice.
As clear as it can be with Al Horford on the enemy lines.
Then we're talking about this. Brad Stevens at practice talking about the bigs. A little conversation about Enes Kanter and the big rotation. The big things, no pun intended, that came out of this is that he kind of just said without making a real declaration that Enes Kanter is coming off the bench. He said that Kanter will probably continue to come off the bench with the additional if they continue to use those same starting wings, which would mean Kemba, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Gordon Hayward. So I've been saying that I would like to see three of those four start, but if they start three of all four of those, they definitely need a guy in there that will not take up offensive possessions. So Kanter to the bench makes sense in that regard. And then you have to figure out who starts. I know you wrote about this on Celtics blog. So why don't you give us your take on this big situation?
Yeah, I mean, you can go in two different directions with this. I know that you, in regards to Rob Williams, are leaning towards giving him time in the G League to get the minutes he deserves. Not that he deserves, excuse me, that he needs to earn to show that he can really handle the workload that's going to be expected of him if he were to be a starter. For me, I would lean more towards Vincent Poirier. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name right.
What's funny, let me interrupt you, that Brad Stevens at the media availability started saying like Vincent, almost like saying like he's trying to say it like the French accent is like Vincent, like that. So he's trying to say like right. Vincent, like but he says it like very Midwestern Vincent. So he's working on it. But
we'll see how long that lasts.
The last name is Poirier.
Poirier.
Poirier. Don't tell Poirier. Tom Westerholm that.
All right, I'll try to keep that pronunciation guide. I should have printed out like a pronunciation guide for me for this podcast.
I took 2 years of French in high school. I'm the absolute authority on this.
And you know what? I should be better at this because I'm Haitian. So I used to do a little French back in my day too, but I lost it.
All right. Well, continue making your point about Poirier.
Yeah. So Poirier, I think I'm in on him starting at least to start the year, just because, I had this take, going back to when we, our roster kind of shook out at the end of July. I kind of had that take of starting him just because I feel like he's the most solid out of all of our options. Tice would probably in an ideal world would be the guy here, but I just don't think that he has the strength or skill set that Boston would need alongside the other four guards and wings that they're going to be starting to make it like a perfect fit. Because like opening night, we're going to be playing against Joel Embiid, and we'll have games against guys like Jokic and all the top centers in the league. We can't throw Tice out there because he'll foul out in the first quarter. And I think Poirier, especially in the 6 minutes that he played in preseason, he was just solid across the board, and it kind of confirmed what I thought heading into the season. He sets really solid picks. He runs to the rim really well. Has good coordination. He's not like a shot blocker by any means, but he has really good defensive foundation. So he slides on defense. He'll put his hands up when it's necessary, and he always puts whoever he's guarding in a good position for the help defense to come and help out. So I think that's what the Celtics need, at least to start out, until Time Lord's ready to, wow, I just said Time Lord unironically, until Robert Williams is ready to come in. Cause in a super ideal world, I would want Robert Williams starting there, but I'm not sure if he's ready for that at this moment.
I think if this was next season, we'd be in a start Robert Williams kind of situation. And the entire reason why I've been saying get him to the G League is to get him ready for that. Now, will that be actually next season? Will it be by the playoffs, All-Star break, something like that. I don't know. However long it takes for him to get right, he'll that's what I want. Because I like the idea of Robert Williams as a starting center who can do those fundamental things, slide, get the hand in passing lanes, really kind of quarterback a defense, and be a pick setting rim runner kind of guy, offensively. That he's not going to be, everything that you want a center to be, but he's going to be in this league for the skills that he has, pretty good. Now he needs to get there. Until then, now we need to figure things out. I have really gone down the start Poirier road a little bit because of the stuff that I saw. Again, just 6 minutes of basic fundamental basketball. But I mean, Brad Stevens said, the quote is, "I thought he played hard. He was in the right spots defensively. He read our coverage as well. I thought when he was in, I felt good about our pick and roll defense," which is a big deal. And for him to say that immediately after saying our pick and roll defense sucked, basically, then that's important to me. Poirier has said, "I want to do the dirty work." He has said that he understands he's not a great offensive player. If you're going to trot out those four wings the Celtics have been talking about putting out there, if you're putting Brown and Gordon on the same together in the same starting lineup, you need somebody out there that's not going to take up offensive possessions. At the same time, now this opens up Cantor to come in off the bench with Marcus Smart. And what Brad likes about Cantor in that situation is, against second units, you can really play to Cantor's strengths and run it through him in the post, and he can make good plays out of the post. So a lot of the stuff that I was talking about with the starting lineups, we're starting Cantor, but figuring out a power forward to do the dirty work. Yeah. Same idea, except now we're mixing it up, and hopefully that works. My only concern, I don't know what you think, is the ball handling off the bench. You're kind of going to be relying, I guess, on Brad Wanamaker being a ball handler off the bench. One of the reasons why I liked Hayward coming off the bench is that he could be a ball handler, and you would have Hayward and Smart together, a combination that I really like.
Well, my take on that is, and as the chief editor-in-chief and commander-in-chief of the Smart Fan Club, I think that he's best with the ball in his hands as a point guard. And you can look at his shooting percentages from earlier in his career as part of that. But I also think that Smart's always been one of our three best passers in any given year on the team. So
for
me personally, I like Brad Wanamaker because he's very steady. He's very solid. I guess I'm optimistic in saying that I would rather have Carson Edwards higher up on the depth chart, which is tough because Carson Edwards is only like 5'11". But I personally would like to see a second unit that features Smart and Edwards playing together with Cantor, because that gives Cantor shooting to pass out of double teams in the post. It kind of spaces things better because Brad Wanamaker is not really a shooter. And the less shooters you have out there, the more clogged it gets, especially if you're playing Shemmy out there as well. So I think that Carson Edwards balances that a bit more. And he's not really a ball handler, so I would be leaving the ball on Smart's hands more often, which is where, as a fan, I personally, and not just as a fan, but as an impartial observer, I also think that Smart's better with the ball in his hands than he is off the ball.
Yeah, I think Smart's passing. I've talked about Smart's passing all the time. I remember a phase where I would just always say Marcus Smart can pass whenever he made a nice play. He can. He's a tremendous passer. So him running the second unit, I have no problems with. But also, then it leaves, not having a second ball handler out there leaves him susceptible to double teams, and you just kind of blitz him. You run a pick and roll with Cantor, you just blitz Marcus Smart, and then what? Who comes up to help out? It might work. Because Marcus Smart's really good at recognizing those things. He can get the ball out of his hands, and the Celtics can figure out how to combat that. But that's the second unit is something that I think is going to be a real work in progress. I do like the idea of Carson Edwards coming in. He's fearless. The kid can shoot. You made a good point. If you're going to run the offense through Cantor in the post, you need to put shooters out there around him to make sure he's got the space to do it. So you're going to have, like, you're probably going to have Carson Edwards playing on the same floor, same side of the floor as Cantor, because that's just going to keep that's going to keep any sort of double teams coming from that way. And maybe it's a situation where they sub Hayward out early after like 4 or 5 minutes, and then he starts the second quarter and still is part of the second unit. So you're bringing Marcus Smart off the bench, and he comes in whatever 8-9 minute mark. But when you start the second quarter, you've got him and Hayward and Carson, and you know, you throw Smart, Hayward, Carson, Grant Williams, Enes Kanter lineup out there. I'm willing to see how that works.
Yeah, I'd be good with that.
So,
you know, but it is interesting though, because I can't remember where exactly I saw it, but I do remember seeing something in recent days about how high level starters don't like being pulled early into the game, which I thought was interesting, because you know, if you're getting pulled early, that means you're getting subbed back in early, and usually that comes with, you know, bigger responsibilities in the second unit. But I can't remember exactly where, but I do remember seeing some player commented on how it kind of sucks the momentum out of them. It's like subbing them out early. And I think they tried playing against Charlotte. They tried playing Smart and Jaylen Brown together. So your idea, I think, would be better and more cohesive by putting Hayward in those situations and leaving Brown and Tatum and Walker together for most of their minutes. So like if you were to take one player out of that quartet, I think Hayward should be the guy to spend more time with Smart and Cantor.
Yeah, I think that's what works. I can understand why players wouldn't like that. You're out there in 4 minutes, 5 minutes. You're trying to get a rhythm, and it's, you know, especially, you know, it's kind of funny, like at the Garden, it's cold. It's a very cold arena.
That's true.
Yeah. You know, it's naturally cold anyway, cause it's a hockey arena as well. And those are always colder. When it gets really cold outside and they've got the doors opening and closing, like last season there on one of the really cold days, it was frigid in there. So you got to get up and down the floor. And if you're just getting warm, that's, you want to get into that rhythm. I get it, but sometimes there's no perfect situation. And the Celtics, considering what they have off the bench, I don't know what Brad Stevens is going to do. I think the Wanamaker question is interesting. I've had people suggest that they cut Wanamaker and try to keep Javonte Green. Like, I don't know. Like, Javonte Green, like, it was great that he did what he did against the end of the Charlotte bench and was dunking all over the place. I don't want to react to, like, cutting a ball handler. Because after that, like, who? Like, Javonte Green's not coming in to handle the ball. And after that, you got, like, Tremont Waters. And it's, you know.
And he can only be with us for a certain amount of days, because right, he's on a two-way contract. So it's not reliable.
Right. So unless you upgrade him, and then all of your backup point guards are, like, you're get Smart, who's, like, 6'4", and then two guys under 6 feet. So you got three guards on your team that are, like, 6 feet and under. That's not something that I would particularly want. Before we wrap up this segment, you mentioned Theis. Brad talked about Theis. He said, quote, having been here, things come so easily to him. So he talked up Theis a little bit. Theis went through, live practice at the facility on Tuesday. So Celtics are now in Florida through Saturday. So they're going to practice in Florida the rest of the week. Theis, I assume, is going to be ready to go. And Brad even said, like, he had like an abductor, an adductor, something that he might have been ready to go if this was a regular season game. I'm really interested to see what Theis can do. But like you said earlier, Theis against Embiid is no. I can't. No, no, no. I do not want to see that. So even if they start Tice on other nights, there will be situations where you got to see just how much physicality Poirier can handle, because he might be the guy against guys like Embiid, or maybe Cantor does start in that situation, because he's 6'11", 6'10". He's strong. He's a big, strong guy. He can guard guys in the post. He just can't guard anybody in space. And I'm afraid of they're just going to put him in a pick and roll. So still a lot to see. I think Orlando's going to be a big test because they've got a lot of length. So we'll see how these guys do. Okay, take a break.
Who do you think?
Oh, go ahead.
Who do you think? Just real quick. Who do you think starts on Friday?
I think he might go with Rob again, just to see, give him a chance. Part of why you start Rob in that situation is because you keep him around all of the best players, and they give him a chance to succeed. I think it's going to be like a confidence boost, and I think Brad kind of wants Rob to have like immediate good things happen to wash away the taste of the last game. Cause I thought he was just horrible in the last game. But I'm willing to push that aside, as I said on yesterday's podcast. So what do you think?
I think I agree with you about Rob. I thought he had a good first quarter. The third quarter was disastrous, but the first quarter was a lot more solid, I think. But I'm hoping that we get a better look at Poirier, because he didn't get a lot of time. So I'd like to see him, you know, maybe at the end of the second quarter, as the starters get subbed back in, he stays out with them just to get a look at that five-man unit to see how cohesive it is. Because I want to see that lineup before, you know, we wind down preseason and guys start to rest. So yeah. I'd like to see it, to see a little bit of that, at least for a couple of minutes. If not, you know, if we're not going to start him, I'd like to see it.
I think that would be great, because we all want to see it. And I want to see him go up against like Vucevic, and
right.
You know, like I want to see him guard like a good offensive big. Like it's one thing to switch onto Cody Zeller. Like it's another thing to guard a guy who just got paid and was an all-star. So
right.
that's an important test. I definitely want to see that. When we come back, a little discussion about Jason Tatum and his maturity. Talk to Danny Ainge, talk to Jason, talk to Brad, and they'll talk about that when we come back next on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Lockdown Celtics on Instagram. I said this on the podcast before, said a couple times, where I just felt like in the first week of seeing Jason Tatum around, he was just carrying himself a little bit differently. He's just walking a little straighter, just a little bit more confident. The way he interacted with people. I love people watching. I really feel like I get a good read on when a person is really truly confident, when a person is faking it. And I just felt like something was just a little bit different about Jason Tatum. And so I got a chance to ask Brad, I got a chance to talk one-on-one with Jason Tatum and Danny Ainge about that. And everybody kind of agreed that, yeah, is a little bit something different. Not massively different. It's not like he's a new person or anything like that. It's just he went from a guy that last year was kind of gassed up, you know, the whole Kobe summer, the whole thing. Like, he felt really, really good about himself. But, like, it was still a weird situation, especially with Kyrie. And I think this year he kind of knows it. He knows, like, okay, he feels like he fits better. And all of them said that Team USA had a big role in that. And I think it's because he went up against a bunch of really good players, even though they didn't win, a bunch of really good players. And he stood out as one of the best in that group. And that's a hell of a confidence boost. And couple that with the new emphasis on taking the right shots, and you really see a Jason Tatum that's got enough of a different mentality that's really, really encouraging.
Yeah, I thought, you know, his first couple of years, he's like the shy kid in class where, you know, he wouldn't hesitate with answers and talking to the media and things like that. But, you know, he wasn't, you know, his personality was never like loud. But from what I've seen, at least, it seems that he's carrying himself with a little more, you know, presence. And you can see by how he's, like you mentioned, how he's walking, how he confidently answers questions now. And I do agree with pretty much everyone that Team USA probably had a big, effect on how he carries himself and looks at himself. He's got all these endorsement deals now. He's got his own fragrance. So I think he knows that he could be the man if he just, you know, changes certain parts of his game. And I was very encouraged to hear him on media day say, hey, threes and layups, that's it. And I think that's what it's going to take for him to get to the next level, is just being able to create contact at the rim and being willing to take three-point shots. So being able to recognize the talent and knowing how to maximize the talent, I think has him feeling a bit more bold in a lot of ways. And Kyrie's out of the way. He looked like the man when he was playing on Team USA with a bunch of, you know, potential future All-Stars. So I think all of that just adds up to a more confident Tatum, which is good for the Celtics long term and short term.
Yeah, I think when you look at Tatum's overall career so far, he stepped in at 19 on a team that had Al, that had Kyrie, that had Gordon coming in like before the injury, and it was pretty obvious that that was a big three. And he was just a rookie trying to find his way. And he took, what did he take? 10 shots per game. I remember all season long, people were like, shoot more, Jason, shoot
please.
More. Because he picked and chose his spots. Like he was, his entire rookie year, he was deferring the whole way. And then last year, it was a weird year with Kyrie and that whole mess. And I do think, I didn't get a chance to talk to him about this, and he probably wouldn't have answered it anyway, but looking up to Kyrie, like they were, like he was in Kyrie's commercial, you know, when they unleashed his new shoes, like he was in the commercial, like they were together all the time. But that's a weird dude to be around at that point. And Kyrie admitted, like he, after his grandfather's death, things changed for him and he wasn't exactly in the right mind state. If we take him at his word there, then that creates a different scenario in there, and the team's losing. And I think this is his first year kind of like, look, they need me to be the man. They know that he knows that. And everybody is aware that those tweaks that he talked about can easily make him an all-star level scorer. Like,
yep.
He took, what did he take, 8 threes in the preseason game? That's
Was up there.
Twice what he took last season. Took 3.9 threes per game last season. If he takes 7 or 8 threes, then he becomes a different player. And then if he maintains the 2-point attempts and they become rim attempts or mostly rim attempts, then he could easily, we've talked about this on the podcast before, he goes from last year 15.7 points per game up into the low 20s at the very least. Tack on a couple of free throws. I mean, this dude is now like Bradley Beal was 25-5-5. Last season. There's no reason why Jason Tatum, fellow St. Louis guy, can't be up around those numbers, close to those numbers, close to 25. I mean, he already averages last year 6 rebounds a game. I don't know if he can get the assists up there, but he can be pushing those numbers. That's all-star caliber Jason Tatum. Like, so I think that confidence
Let me
network will do it. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Who scores more this year, Gordon or Jason?
Man, that's a great question. I'm going to say Tatum.
Because that's the only thing, that for me, I agree with you in a vacuum, but then I look around the landscape of the team. Like, can anyone even get close to 25, or are we going to be looking at, you know, big three era Celtics where it was Paul Rey and KG averaging 18 and 19 each?
Well, I mean, Tatum dropped 20 in 23 minutes on effective, efficient shooting. Not to say that that's going to be the norm, but it's possible. So I'm going to say Tatum scores more than Gordon, mostly because Gordon is a much more willing passer and a better passer, and will be in situations to handle the ball and make those plays. So I think just by how they'll be used, he'll score more. But I wouldn't be surprised if this is a situation where you've got three guys that are averaging close to or more than 20. Like, you could have a guy averaging 18, another guy averaging 21, and another guy averaging 24. Because then after that, it's just going to be a bunch of guys piecing together 10, 12, 14 points. Jalen's probably going to get like 15 or 16. You know, the ball's going to move. They're going to get a lot of opportunities. There's going to be a high-powered offense. I think that much is evident. I think the opportunities are going to be there. If Tatum can get to the line, if Gordon Hayward can get to the line, then and Kemba can get to the line, I think we're going to see three guys put up some pretty good scoring numbers. I think it's possible. I don't think it's going to be three guys scoring 16 or 17 points. I think we can see three guys put up some pretty decent numbers.
Yeah. I wonder, even between Kemba and Tatum, who's going to be the leading scorer? Because we could be looking at a situation where third-year player Jason Tatum is leading the Celtics, a potential three seed in scoring in his, you know, in his third year, which would be impressive.
I think it's possible.
I definitely think, yeah, I think so too. I think this is the year where, because last year Tatum, even in a down year, got a lot of All-Star consideration as a reserve. And you know, with the voting results, is he wasn't that far off. Like, he was in the Blake Griffin range, which wasn't, you know, too far. I think he was like fifth or sixth somewhere in there.
Yeah, he was high on the
in Fords. Yeah, which speaks to his popularity, but also, you know, like I could definitely see him taking that leap this year. I would love to see a 25 point per game Jason Tatum, but I do think he'll be closer to 21 this year.
I think so.
Yeah. Which, that would be great. Like, please sign me up for that. When you say top three scorers and we're looking at, you know, two guys around 18, 19, and one at like 20, 21, 23, I wonder where that puts Jason. Where that puts Jalen. Cause I don't know. It feels weird penciling him in for like 12, 15 points a game. Cause I don't know. But I wonder how they're going to approach that situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's we're going to go through these next few games to kind of see how things shake out a little bit offensively. Jalen's going to be an interesting story, and we'll have to see. I think he's going to be a guy that drops like 20 every once in a while and then has an 8-point game, and he's just going to have to deal with it. So
Jeff Green.
There you go. Oh.
No, I didn't mean that. Please don't.
This is how we're going to have to end the podcast now. Like, this is the end of the podcast.
You're never going to have me back now.
That's it. The one and only appearance from Andrew Doxy on this podcast.
I'm just conditioned. Whenever I hear, you know, inconsistency, like, that's the first name that pops up in my head.
It's a knee-jerk reaction. I get it. follow Andrew at Andrew Doxy, D-O-X-Y, at Andrew Doxy on Twitter. Give him a follow. Good young writer and a card-carrying member of Weird Celtics Fritter. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Give us that good 5-star rating. Give us that good written review and share the podcast. Make sure to tell everybody. Listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.